Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neve's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neve Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
And welcome to The Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. I'm Cathy Weston.
And I'm Shirley Heyman.
Tonight we are talking about how our children can achieve success at primary school. And we're joined by some absolutely fantastic guests. We've got Lucia Federucci in the studio. If you live in St Albans, you're going to know Lucia. She runs the Mount Carmel Kindergarten that many of us know and love, and has had many, many years experience as an early years practitioner. And she's a mum of 10, which we'll have to come back to because it's an amazing fact that everyone's always astounded by. And also, hopefully on the line, we've got Professor Dominic Wise, who is the Professor of Early Education and Primary Education at the Institute of Education in London. Hi, Dominic.
Hi.
Just checking you're there.
I'm here and ready.
We were just adding up the amount of the years of experience that Lucia and Shirley together, actually, I think it was 55 years experience of working with children.
Yeah, amazing.
So between the three of you, it'll be a great chat.
Yeah.
Just to kick it off, what do we actually mean by success at primary school? What does that look like, Dominic?
Well, I think it's a range of things, really. I mean, we tend to think very quickly about academic success, and as an academic myself, I'm not uninterested in academic success, and more straightforwardly, what do we mean by that? Well, we mean things like learning to read and enjoying reading, being able to write, obviously other core subjects like mathematics and science and so on. But actually, that's a really thought-provoking question, because there are many aspects to success for different children, and I think parents are particularly good at noticing and understanding when their child's social and emotional needs are being met or not being met, and they are terrifically important. I mean, both sides are important. But a sort of very common expression is whether, you know, a parent's children are happy at school. And although that's not the whole story, it's certainly an important part of the story.
And Dominic, clearly, you know, before children go to primary school, there are lots of childcare options. They can go to the childminder, stay at home, go to a nursery. And obviously, the early years clearly matter very much in terms of how a child does. Would you agree?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's something we've learnt through research, particularly over the last decade, is just how important the early years are to children's development. Now, that's not to say, I mean, I think we've got to get this in balance. It's not to say that everything is done in the early years, and if children don't succeed conventionally in the early years, they're not going to succeed later in life. That's not true. But what we do know is that a good start in life, and that means it means a positive and productive home environment, a safe environment, a loving environment, but it also means attendance at high quality, well organized preschool and early years care and education.
And Dominic, let's just bring Lucia in here. What is a great nursery, Lucia? What are parents meant to look for when they go and find that environment?
Well, I'm really glad that Dominic talked about happiness, because one of the things that I say to parents is it's so important that your child is happy. And I don't think we can ever underestimate that. The science proves that when a child is happy, or when a human being is happy, they learn, and vice versa. So certainly that somewhere where the staff are warm, where there's plenty for the children to do, and there's a good atmosphere, and you can only really judge that by going there yourself. And generally, children are like their parents, so if the parent feels comfortable, chances are their child will.
Oh, we've heard this term, school readiness. I mean, what does that actually mean, Dominic?
Well, it's quite the term school readiness has come to the fore, particularly in the current government's education policy, and it's been particularly applied, for example, in the new national curriculum that's being implemented from this term onwards. There's this idea of readiness for secondary school, for example. Now, if we backtrack a bit from that, I mean, clearly it makes common sense, I think, to most parents that children need to be prepared for each phase of their lives, and, you know, one of those early phases is perhaps their first day in a nursery school. By the way, I ran away from mine, you know, or an early year setting. And then, obviously, as the children progress through schooling and there's the big change from primary schools into secondary schools. And, you know, in simple terms, readiness means, I think, that although any new environment, learning environment, is always something that you have to get used to, you shouldn't be traumatized by it. And so there are many things that, for example, parents can do to reassure their children, and there are many things that the settings themselves can do or not do in some cases. There are positive things they can do to help children essentially begin to feel comfortable with the surroundings as quickly as possible.
Can we ask you a specific question? Because I think parents and practitioners sometimes differ on this.
Yeah.
Do you think that school readiness needs to include children, you know, doing their phonic play and doing early reading skills at nursery?
For the phonics question, I spent quite a lot of my academic career researching it, arguing about it. What we do know from research is that phonological awareness and basically phonics teaching are one important component of learning to read. The trouble is, in England in particular, and increasingly around the world, phonics is being magnified way beyond its place, and at the expense of a lot of incredibly important things. For example, you know, if children are not motivated to read, if they don't enjoy reading, then we know from research, good research, that they won't learn to read as effectively. Children need to have time to explore books, to share books communally. They need to do so many things with texts that the phonics question, it just seems to dominate so much of the conversations that we have in education. Of course, not really helped by the fact that all 6-year-olds in England, and England is unique for this, are tested on nonsense words. That's something that I am very much against, have been ever, you know, for a long time. But putting that aside, and we may return to that, the most important thing I think that parents can do to help their children is get hold of really good books, share them with their children, enjoy them with their children, answer their children's questions, provoke their questions, and then quite naturally there'll come a point when the children start getting interested in the more technical aspects. So they will start getting interested in sounds quite naturally, and there's nothing wrong with parents from now and again sort of exploring sounds out of fun, really, and out of interest, because language is fascinating. So you know, that's the spirit, I think. Yes, it's important, but it's got to be kept in balance.
I mean, I think I absolutely agree with you about the fun bit. I mean, Lucia, what are you doing at Mount Carmel to encourage children to share books and learn about sounds? You know, what's your view on it?
I agree absolutely with
Dominic.
Yes, I think phonics can be a little bit overrated and tedious. So we tend to have them around, to have them puzzles and play with phonics. But we only really do them in a formal way just the last term, because if you spend a year on phonics, by the time the children are getting to school, they don't want to see another phonic ever again. And I've heard there's a danger to early reading can put children off. So I think just having lots of stories, lots of books. We do puppet shows, which they love, and also telling a story. There's nothing like listening to somebody tell a story. When I was a little girl, we used to love my mother telling us stories about the naughty little girl that got eaten up.
And the story would always end with a little naughty little girl getting eaten up by a lion or a bear. And for me, that was just magical. So you don't even... Yes, it's wonderful to have good books, but you can make up stories as well of something that happened on your way to nursery. So just talking to the children and getting their imaginations going.
I think that the core of what you've said, the central message is it's about imagination as a parent, and, you know, provoking imagination, a love of language and books, and the rest comes naturally, but just showing an interest in words, you know.
Definitely,
and,
yes.
And sort of engage, making sure your children are always enjoying it and are naturally motivated. But I have to say, Dominic, when it comes to actually... you know, getting ready to go to school, would you agree that there is so much parental anxiety when you first bring your child into the school gates for so many reasons, way beside the learning? You know, you're worried about their social skills, you're worried, is everyone going to like them, is the teacher nice, you don't know anything about the teacher half the time. What is your advice for parents whose children may have started school quite recently, a few weeks ago, and they're very worried about the key things are normally, you know, friendship groups and whether or not they're, how to speak to their actual teacher, how to ask about how they're getting on. Because parents typically do not want to come across as very forward or neurotic or pushy or all those other things, and they don't want to get the teacher's back up.
No. I mean, of course, there are such a wide variety of situations that parents encounter and that teachers encounter from parents. You know, and to be honest, a well-organized school often will mean that part of being well-organized and being a good school is helping parents to allay some of their natural anxieties and so on. I think to answer the quick question, which is about how do you, should you approach a teacher, well, the good teacher should be, frankly, overjoyed that a parent wants to talk to them and get their advice. That for me is the way to approach teachers. Approach a teacher as an expert in child development, at learning and teaching, and genuinely seek out their advice. And when they're approached like that, teachers are, should be, nearly all teachers, are actually would be really happy. I mean, sometimes it may need to be organized, you know, you may need to make an appointment, but certainly in the very first days, teachers, not just teachers, of course, it's also assistants as well, they tend to be around at the end of the day, and there can be quite an informal opportunity just to chat. And I think, you know, even sometimes for some parents, just a brief chat for, you know, how's my child getting on and so on, is enough. But other times, parents may be over-anxious. That doesn't mean to say that they shouldn't be listened to, and they will be, and probably a slightly longer conversation will allay their fears. Now, I think one of the problems is that the system we have in England is tending to ratchet up anxiety a bit, I think, because of things like high-stakes assessments and politicians endlessly going on about standards. Now, of course, parents in the wider society are part of that lobby, and there are parents who lobby very strongly for things like, you know, particular way they see high-quality education through testing and so on. But what they may not realise is that some attitudes to testing and particular views of standards can increase anxiety more generally, because they push up the stakes, and they can... well, miss, actually, or forget the vital importance of all those other social things that we began this evening talking about, as well as many other. So there's a few ideas.
So in terms of the social, bring you in here, Lucia, as well. I'm sure you've seen children develop over time from attending your nursery into, you know, little adults going off to primary school, and Shirley as well. What would you say you've noticed? Is there a pattern of children who are the most confident heading to primary school? What characteristics would they share that you think parents should be aware about? What is it that instills that confidence in those children?
For me, I think
Yeah, my experience was that the children who hadn't had too much pressure put on them were often the ones that were a little bit more relaxed, more willing to take a risk, you know, share their thoughts, their feelings, their experiences, because they didn't worry whether they said the right thing or not. So those children actually had more practice at interaction in the class, you know, speaking to adults, initiating conversations with adults. So that's one thing I used to find quite stressful when I saw that some parents, you know, through the best of kind of intentions, put a lot of pressure on their children to contribute. Lucia, how about you?
Yes, definitely. Confident parents make confident children. And if you're an uptight parent, your child will be uptight. Mm. So the philosophy is you relax and your child will relax. You know, the child picks up on all the parents' anxieties, whether you like it or not. So you have to sort of deal with your own issues if you want your child to have any chance. It's the same when children start nursery. You'll have parents coming in and going out in tears. So it's very hard for their child to settle if they can't really get it together. So, yes, confident parents, confident child.
And Dominic, it's quite interesting. I don't think the early years are valued as much as they should be amongst parents, because it's in those years and in those wonderful settings that the tone is set. Those early years practitioners are helping those children with their first steps, if you like, towards, you know, success at primary school, because they're also, the early years practitioners are dealing with the parents as well and trying to iron out some initial issues. Would you both say that, ladies?
Yes, I actually feel very sorry for parents these days. I think it's much harder than when I was a parent 30 years ago. Obviously, I'm still a parent, but when I first started having children, I think the early years are valued, possibly sometimes a little bit too much. And I think the home value and mothering and fathering as well needs to be valued. I think sometimes parents have lost their confidence and feels that the professionals need to do it and they're just taking the children to and from nursery. And I think we need, as practitioners, to give those parents back how really vitally important their role is in helping their children feel secure and well-rounded.
And I think there is an over-reliance. I mean, the government seems to give that message, doesn't it, Shirley, that the early years, you know, they need to be in nursery, we're going to fund their places, that's where they should be, because they're trying to encourage a lot of parents to return to work.
Yeah.
Would you say that?
Yeah, I certainly have seen that, you know, over the years that I've been involved in it, you know, more and more parents feeling like their baby needs to go to day nursery before they go to preschool into nursery. And obviously, we know that some parents need to do that because they've got to go out and earn money. But I think the child, you know, the parent, as we know, is the child's first educator. So there is this thing in all schools, isn't there, nursery and primary, about working in partnership. But I just feel like, Lucia, you know, that sometimes I think parents feel like they don't know what they're doing. In fact, it can be just instinctive for some. You know, it's about playing and having fun. Yes, phonic play, if it comes along, like Dominic said, almost incidental. But, you know, just enjoy those years, because they whiz by. They really whiz by before your child is in school full time. You know, and some of them now are, what, just four? Is it even younger now, Lucia? They're going in, aren't they? Some of them just four.
Two. Many children. Oh, going into school.
Into reception.
Absolutely.
Full time.
And it's that home environment, that grounding at home, that helps children be secure. And that sets them off for going to nursery, going to school. It's that emotional security. Mm-hmm. And I personally would put that on the top of my list for school readiness. Am I emotionally secure? Do I have emotional intelligence? Am I able to sit, listen, cooperate? All those self skills, which really are started in the home and continued at nursery.
Presumably you're in agreement with that, Dominic.
I am. I think that's incredibly important. I mean, I mean, one thing that is curious, it's the nobody likes imposition, and I'm at my instinct, I'm a liberal with a small L. So I don't like the idea at all of the state intervening too much in the lives of families and so on. At the same time, what I was saying right at the beginning of the program was we do have now very convincing evidence of the impact of high quality early years education for children's life chances. In fact, one of the biggest studies ever carried out was done in my department at the IOE and across several other universities in partnership. It was called the EPI project and later on the EPSI project. And they found quite clear advantages for children who attended high-quality preschool. At the same time, that's not okay. I mean, that research is important, but it doesn't mean to say that, for example, children who have more time being educated at home and then maybe go into an early years setting at reception these days at four, that doesn't mean to say they're necessarily disadvantaged. It's just that we do know that statistically more children are advantaged by having high-quality early years education than not having it.
Say high quality setting, that's the key word, isn't it?
It is.
Because
it is.
It's very variable, isn't it? I mean, when I used to visit lots of different nurseries back in the, 8 years ago, you've no idea as a new parent what makes a good nursery or not. You haven't got a clue, you know.
I think that's true.
And
yeah.
I think people are at sea wondering what that actually means.
Yeah, I think that's even more difficult in some ways, the knowing by looking, if you like, by visiting. It's probably even more difficult to work that out about an early year setting than it is about a primary school setting, partly because we have such diversity in the early years sector,
yeah.
You know, from private to part-time to full-time to, settings that have qualified teachers there. And by the way, the presence of a qualified teacher in a setting leads to, as we should expect, leads to gains in children's progress. I think it is difficult, and I don't think there's any simple advice with that, to be honest.
Early years practitioners, when parents are looking around an early years setting, a nursery, they don't think too much about qualifications. So it's quite interesting that you'd say that there would, considering those practitioners as teachers, I think people forget that, what a high quality job it is. Isn't that right, Shirley? That it's a special area of education, isn't it?
I would personally say that, but then, that was my job for 20 odd years, and I'm sure you'd say that, Lucia. And we've both worked with young people that have progressed through the ranks, come in and got more and more qualifications, ended up getting degrees, doing extra qualifications to become specialists in early years. These people understand child development. They understand emotional intelligence in staff and in children. So, I would certainly say, please respect these people working with your children. Lucia, you agree, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely, yes. But I would also say, I think a lot also depends on the length of time that child spends in nursery. I mean, when we talk about research, you often have to read the research in a certain way. And I think there's a difference between going to a nursery for 2.5 days a week or 3 days a week or part-time and going there full-time for sort of, 8 until 6, 5 days a week. So I think the length of time, the more important it is that nursery is high quality. If you're going there for a couple of hours, if the child runs around, has a good time, and there's not loads of stuff, it doesn't really matter because it's getting a lot of input, a lot of emotional support from home. But if it's in nursery more than it's at home, it's absolutely vital that nursery is high quality, because the nursery then is going to have much more of an impact on that child's development than the home is.
Yeah, just to add to that, issue of time. The research I've been talking about, the EPI project, found that duration of attendance in months was statistically important, and that an earlier start actually was related to better intellectual development. And full-time attendance led to no better gains for children than part-time provision, interestingly. But certainly the issue of quality was, and there was the study found that quality can exist in all kinds of early years settings, but in general, it was highest in settings that had integrated care and education, and in nursery schools.
So, basically an emphasis on education, not just sort of looking after caretaking, but...
Yes, absolutely. It's both. Yes, both, it's like we've been saying all the way through. We've been talking about the importance of the social side of learning and relationships and so on, and the cognitive side and the developmental, the learning side, if you like. Both are vitally important.
We're going to take a little break, and hopefully you'll still be on the phone when we come back, Dominic.
I'll try to be.
Just have a tiny little break and see you all in a second.
Okay, then.
joining us back on the Parent Show, Lucia Federici in the studio and Professor Dominic Wise on the phone. Now, I just wanted to talk about teachers. We've mentioned it briefly, Dominic, but when your children enter into primary school, that relationship is absolutely vital, that you get on with your child's teacher. It's something I think parents worry about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think as a parent, it's quite troubling that we don't know too much about these people who are going to be with our child all day.
Yeah.
What would you sort of say about that?
Well, I think one of the most important things, and if we're, for the time being, still thinking about early years teachers, one of the most important things is the high level of training that teachers in the United Kingdom, and of course in other parts of the world, but certainly I know I've experienced teacher training in England particularly. The level of training that they have is really, it makes them into professional people. And of course they need experience as well. They get that, it starts on their teacher training year, it carries on into their, when they're newly qualified and forever in their careers. But I think one of the fascinating things for me about the knowledge that teachers have, I mean, people tend to defer, for example, to a doctor or a lawyer, when in a way that they would not defer necessarily to a teacher. And I think it's because the knowledge that teachers have, it's much less obvious. And it's not a straightforward sort of factual or technical knowledge, although it does include that. But it's some of these softer skills, nevertheless very sophisticated skills, that teachers, good teachers, have, acquire, and learn throughout their careers. So I hope I haven't wandered too much off the original question, but those are the things that occurred to me.
Certainly, Dominic, one of the things I learned as a teacher over years was, non-verbal communication skills. I've always felt that, I wanted my daughter to be in a class where the teacher could kind of control it without almost having to say anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, do you think that that's something that parents could look for, is a teacher that can just control his or her class?
Yes, that's absolutely essential, although it's important to remember, I think, that... Most teacher training, frankly, begins with behaviour management, as we call it, discipline, as some people might call it, and without that, learning can't take place.
Mm.
However, I think it's important to remember that teachers have different styles. And, let me take a fairly basic example. If we take, for example, noise, or what some people consider to be noise, others would consider to be normal talk, for example, in a classroom. Some teachers, in fact, some not very good teachers, might insist on far too much silence, for example. So I think within parameters, but certainly, and this is what, of course, inspectors look for, it's what head teachers look for when they're evaluating their staff. It's a basic requirement that there's good control of the children. Obviously, most importantly, they're safe, but there's much more to it than that, and it's about supporting and sustaining them and ensuring there's a good working environment, an orderly environment. And part of that comes through actually the ability to develop relationships with children, even children you might not instinctively like, in inverted commas. Mm. That's irrelevant, really, for a teacher. They have to form positive and constructive relationships with all the children they teach.
And Dominic, for parents listening who may have children who are experiencing learning difficulties of some kind or have some other issues that they feel, their child may need particular help in school, what advice, how does this advice apply? Should they be fostering a different relationship with the teacher? I think I've spoken to a parent this week who felt very worried about what other parents felt about her child in the class because he had particular needs.
Yeah.
What advice would you give those parents in terms of their own child settling into primary school and how to go about those, negotiate those different relationships?
Well, the way it begins, if you have concerns of that kind, the way it begins is, as I was saying earlier, you arrange to speak to the teacher. And for something like that, I think you do need to arrange an appointment because you probably need, in the first instance, at least, 10, 15 minutes. Now, it may be that the teacher says, well, I understand the things you're talking about, but in their experience, the child does not have particularly special needs. It may be the teacher says, well, yes, that they'd noticed there might be some issues and that they want to, for example, monitor the child a bit more carefully or encourage assistance to monitor the child more carefully and then arrange to meet again maybe in a month or so to review that. Now, if and of course there are a significant minority of children who have really quite difficult problems, particular needs, and there are you know statutory processes that are there to ensure that schools and teachers engage with parents, and that it's a supportive process where children's particular needs are met. So, and that, as I say, it may ultimately lead to a statement of special educational needs where, and in extreme cases, that can mean, for example, additional support from care assistants and so on, or from all kinds of assistance. But also, but apart from that, which is a more severe end of the scale, and by the way, not necessarily something to be unduly worried about, because sometimes work can be done to support an individual child, and over a period of months and years, they're helped and they develop and things change. For other children, it may be that it's a persistent problem that will be with them throughout their schooling.
And obviously, Dominic, presumably in the early years as well, many of those problems will have been picked up. Is that right, Lucia? And that's where the sort of partnership between early years and the primary school comes into the...
Yes, well, yes. It's usually pretty obvious once you've been working with the child if there are issues, and you usually find that parents have had those concerns. I'd like to turn it around, actually. I think it's just as difficult for the teachers to approach parents when there is a concern, and certainly in the early years, we're often at the forefront mm-hmm. of having to tell a parent we've got a concern, and that's so difficult because parents usually, their first reaction is one of sort of sadness, but also anger. How dare you say this about my child? And it's really, really difficult. It's very tempting just to not say anything and hope the problem goes away. So I think sometimes you know, teachers are just as scared of parents as parents are of teachers.
And before early years teachers say something like that to a parent, what's the process, Shirley? Do they sort of consult with people? They don't just kind of come out and say it after one or two observations.
No, I mean, obviously they will have been observing the children. They would have talked as a team of practitioners around. You know, and hopefully there's somebody on that team that's got experience and specific training to help children with additional needs, whether that be language, behaviour, you know, development, physical issues, whatever. So they would usually be used to setting up an environment that's a quiet room, trying to find a time that works for the parent and for the teacher, having a meeting, documenting it. You know, it's all done very professionally these days in my experience of nurseries and indeed, you know, primary schools. So, and they would want to set a meeting for after that as well to follow up, bring in anybody from outside that they wanted to do. But maybe they might just initially just explore it with the parent and leave it there for a bit. So I would say generally it's done very sensitively. And like Lucia says, it's a hard job.
And do parents assume that you will write a report and send it? There's lovely sort of transitioning between schools of information. Does that actually happen, or is that something parents have to request? I think they sort of imagine it happens in some way.
Well, some might imagine it's happened. Some probably would rather it didn't happen. I actually give all my reports to parents, and it's up to them. The ball's in their court to pass on those records if they want to. It's their child's records. I'm private, so I don't feel any sort of duty to send on things. So if they want to, and most do, they give a little report to the school.
So the general message, really, what we've been talking about, is about partnership.
Absolutely.
You know, it should be partnership between teacher and parent, and always to realise, Dominic, that the teacher is on the side of your child and on your side.
Yes.
Yeah.
And very little reason to be defensive. Now, we had some questions submitted about homework, so we'd like everyone's views on homework. I think, Dominic, many parents feel there's too much homework in primary school.
Well, if they do, I support them.
Well, okay, that's an easy answer. I mean, Lucia, you've got 10 children. What is your advice to parents on the doing of homework, the motivating children to do homework?
Well, obviously, to a certain extent, when children are juniors, I think homework, I mean, I occasionally get children, parents in the nursery that ask for homework. But I think infants, it is a bit ridiculous, except perhaps a little bit of reading. That's obviously good to take home their reading book. What I used to hate as a parent is when the child would come home with some homework, which actually involved me getting an egg box and straying in yogurt pots and all sorts of things.
You're
and actually,
here.
it was homework for me. So a little sheet of sums, I would applaud that, something that they can go off and do on their own, perhaps when they're about 8 or 9. But anything that involves working together or playing games together, I find that a bit patronising. Oh, go with mummy into the kitchen and make some cakes and weigh everything out. Well, I do that anyway. I don't really need the school to be telling me I need to do that. So,
and the other thing is you get disciplined for not doing it. So this is obligatory homework. You know, you'll look and you'll think, oh, no, we have to find things around the house that begin with P, when actually we were off out to the park.
Yes.
You know, and you have to do it. And it's, I think the child can pick up on the fact that you think it's a chore, which is also difficult.
Mm.
Now, what about school reports? That was another question that was asked. Now, school reports obviously are sent home to inform you about your child's progress throughout primary school. But they're, I think parents are sort of bewildered with what to do with them, Dominic. You know, are they sort of meant to trigger a conversation? Or are you meant to and they're all written, because we've looked at them across different schools, in a different way. Sometimes they just tell you what your child can't do, which is, you know, what would your advice be about how to read school reports and how to respond to them?
Well, for me, the best reports say something positive, first and foremost, constructive, and real about the child. And in other words, the teacher has carefully noted something that the child did, a particular activity they did well, a particular trait they have. And that, when a parent reads something like that, and especially if they remember the event or whatever, it starts a conversation straight away between parent and teacher, even if that, you know, if that conversation may happen in a parent's evening, or it might be something that it provokes thinking rather than actual conversation. But I think the problem that we've had over the years with reports is kind of rather abstract national curriculum levels and numbers and so on, which under the current government proposals are set, I think, to get even worse. I think that's where there's a problem, because, you know, it's over technical and a bit meaningless. So my view is schools should write reports that are honest, and, you know, where children can work on certain aspects both of behaviour and of learning, they should be told. But they should always begin with it should begin with an honest assessment of what the child is good at, knows, enjoys, before moving on to some suggestions for how parents might support their children to learn more.
Now, Dominic, you've written a book, many books, but one of your books was on how your child can have a successful primary school education. Can you just give us an idea of what's in that book if parents are interested in buying it?
Well, yes, if I may, I would. There were two books, and the first one was How to Help Your Child Read and Write. It's the same. It's also by Pearson, and it's the one that I'm, I suppose, kind of most proud of in relation to the stuff I've done for parents, because apart from the advice that I give and the research I draw on, it's a reasonably personal account, because it includes examples of my own children's development. But I can, you know, I could, there are a few important things we've already touched on, I think, tonight. One of those is how you talk to your child, engage with your child, is absolutely crucial pretty much to all learning. And it starts right from the moment they're born, and it continues. It changes, obviously, as they develop, and different kinds of relationships. You know, relationships change all the time between parents and children. But certainly in the early years and primary years, it's about that friendly engagement with children. And I know we said earlier about we don't like the idea of hot-housing children or over-pushing them, but there's nothing wrong with having kind of quite gentle high aspirations for your child, high expectations, you know, just you know, enjoying their successes and encouraging them to follow their interests and to succeed. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. In fact, the contrary, I think that that really does help learning.
So lots of chat and fun and engagement at home and some aspirations thrown in. Thanks so much, Dominic. We're going to have to leave it there with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Lucia, one final word from you. What advice would you give to parents helping their children through the primary years?
Just try and enjoy it. Enjoy the Christmas plays, enjoy the assemblies and the Christmas fetes, and just try and enjoy it. Relax. It goes by. And
deep breaths.
Once they get to secondary school, you won't be involved. So enjoy the primary school years.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for joining
pleasure.
Us.
It's been lovely to be here.
And good luck there from Mount Carmel. We all
Thank
love
you.
It locally.
Thank
Thanks
you.
A lot.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.